Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo. With me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy we can soon gamble week, legally.
It was rambling time earlier this year, and now it is gambling time.
Yes, for those who live in states that are likely to allow it, which I believe we both, I assume California is. I know New York will.
There's literally no way California avoids this.
Yeah.
Especially when we already have casinos here. Obviously, California would love to get in on the gambling that we hand over to Vegas nearby every year. So, I don't see it taking very long for arguably, if not completely, the most liberal state in the union to be all in on gambling very shortly.
Yeah, I assume. I'm sure there will some that will continue to outlaw it, but I think any state on the coasts is probably a pretty good bet to allow it, if not right away, then pretty quickly.
I feel like even in some of the states that you would think wouldn't be a fan, I feel like there's like Native American casinos already.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't think it's going to be like a direct like liberal conservative line, because obviously like sports gambling isn't a super like partisan thing.
Right. It's great for local economies.
Yeah, that's like, I'm sure Connecticut will jump on it because they need all the help they can get. Obviously Jersey was like kind of pushing for this in the beginning, so definitely exciting. Obviously I don't think many of us who gamble at any amount had much of an issue doing so, but it was a dumb thing to have illegal, and obviously there are issues with gambling, people getting addicted, but that's really with any kind of activity of this sort. So obviously I think people should have the option, and I'm interested to see what happens to like Las Vegas.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, they have showed like statistics that less, like fewer and fewer people that visit Vegas are gambling in a traditional sense. So not the sports books, but going to the card tables and roulette and craps and all that. Like, and I've seen it. Like, I haven't been there in a couple of years, but you're seeing fewer people our age gamble in a traditional sense. At least parking it at tables the way that, you know, older folks do, especially around here, where there's plenty of buses that head from the Southern California area over to Vegas every weekend, or some of the other like crappy casinos around here, and you just don't see as much of that from younger people. So I think Vegas, I don't know how much they'd be fans of it, because I do feel like this is going to have a really negative effect for them. I know for me, more and more every time I'm there, I spend much more time in the sports books than I do at the tables. I would think that this could take some of the wind out of their sails, and that's really not great timing for them, given, you know, the investment from businesses, the investment from casinos, obviously, the investment from, you know, both the NHL and the NFL upcoming. It does seem like this could spell some negative things for them, though. Admittedly, like, I don't want to be an alarmist either, but I don't necessarily think this would be a positive for them.
Yeah, I assume they would probably have preferred the status quo. At the same time, I also assume that they kind of figured this was a stark possibility. Right. It kind of seemed like we were heading this way. And it just didn't seem like there were that many people that were like, there isn't like a huge group of anti-gambling people that are super notable. There are obviously people that were against it, like in government and whatnot, but it wasn't like a giant, like, I don't know if a giant anti-legalized gambling lobbying firm or something that was out here on the front lines. So it seemed like a thing that was likely to eventually pass at some point. So I have to assume like the people that are running sports books who know what they're doing in terms of making money were probably, you know, had some contingency plan here and understand that this was a pretty decent possibility.
Oh, of course. And I mean, the counterpoint in a positive sense for them is that, okay, well, like, sure, we might lose out on some people as like more casual sports books open away from casinos. That said, like, getting more people to not view gambling as this, like, especially sports gambling, as this, like, you know, societal ill, leads to more people gambling on sports, which does lead to more people spending money here.
Yeah, and like you said, I think a lot of the, I don't know how many people are making like trips to Vegas to gamble on sports specifically. I think people are making trips to Vegas for like the whole experience.
The whole experience, and the sports book is part of it.
Yeah, and when you're there, like I had a town's place that I could gamble otherwise, but when I was in Vegas the last few summers, I'd place bets at the sports book because it was, a slightly different type of experience, and it was just like a different thing to do, and it felt like a little more official, and I don't think that's gonna go away, especially compared to you're not gonna have Vegas popping up everywhere. You're gonna have I'm sure a couple off-track betting places and whatnot here and there, but it's not gonna be like the full, thing of walking into the Westgate and seeing a million TV screens and having like the giant like it's just not going to be replicable across the board. So I still think people are going to be going there, and I don't think this will be like a death knell, but I'm sure they're not like super thrilled.
Yeah, you see, I actually think big cities, I mean New York, LA, I think you'll actually see major sports books be able to open there, and maybe even sports books that are owned by, some of the current folks, looking at MGM in particular and Caesars, those places being able to just open other locations elsewhere, but without the resort and casino aspect of it. Because I do think that, going back to my earlier point, if you're seeing fewer and fewer young people gamble in the traditional sense, this doesn't necessarily open the floodgates for casinos in every city, but it does open the floodgate for sports books. And I think we might actually see a trend toward less of an OTB feel and more of a premium and luxury experience a little bit. Because while I agree that people aren't going to Vegas for the sports book experience year round, I think around the NFL playoffs, around March Madness, around some of the big bowl games, people do make that trip. I know, I've done the March Madness trip, and people literally just live at the sports books for those events. So I could see that potentially being a slight hit, but again, might be balanced out by the fact that more people are going to, sports betting is going to be normalized. Therefore, more people are just doing it in general, so that helps everybody.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And like you said, like a lot of the major companies, I'm sure, will be the ones who are leading the charge in terms of opening places in the major cities. So it's not going to be like, it'll probably be pretty hard to like get into that space otherwise. Obviously, like MGM and those type of companies know what they're doing in terms of opening these a sports book. So I'm sure there will be new companies in the space, but I'm sure they already have a leg up as well. So that kind of mitigates a lot of the issues for Vegas in particular.
Yeah, and I mean, it also depends on how the states want to handle this. If the states want to handle it, there's a, I know we saw this with legalization of marijuana in a lot of states. It's a pretty, extensive process to be able to get approvals and all that, and with that comes taxation, obviously. We'll see certain states will probably create more hoops than others. You're not going to see Trader Joe's suddenly have a sports book in the corner, but. Yeah, I mean, depending on how liberal or how stringent these rules are, you could potentially see, much more. Again, this goes to the normalization point. This is how you get much more casual experiences if it's, like a supermarket or a movie theater or random drugstore where you can place a parlay bet, versus just having it in set locations. So I think there's a lot more to be decided. I think we're going to see on that front, but. What I'm also interested in seeing is kind of its effect on college sports in particular, where this is a brand new revenue stream for them, and one that they've largely, efforted to keep everybody out of. And now it's going to be interesting to see how college commissioners and athletic directors and all that are able to manage its almost undoubted effect on college sports.
Yeah, I'm sure college will be the least responsive. Obviously, the NFL hasn't really been as open as mostly the NBA and NHL, I guess, by putting a team in Vegas. Like, that's a pretty clear sign that you're somewhat open to things. But the NBA has been, like, the real, I mean, in so many issues, but especially this, so progressive in terms of how it handles these things that are pretty inevitable, and it's very good at getting out in front of things. And then the MLB has been kind of behind them. The NFL, I don't think has, I'm sure they put out a statement, but they really haven't jumped aboard, although I'm sure, once they see the NBA taking a cut,
Well, and
they'll
the
be right
Raiders are
there.
going there. They would have to. I mean,
That's true.
I,
I
yeah.
forgot about that. The Raiders are going there. So yeah, I think the pro sports will be, even if it's like somewhat, skeptically, I think they will all jump aboard. College, I'm sure, will fight, will be tooth and nail against it, even as, there's nothing they can really do about it, I don't think. And I don't know. feel like the NCAA should be more open-minded about trying to get their cut here. Maybe they all at the same time as like railing against it, but they're just so bad at getting ahead of things. I don't have a lot of faith.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this briefly in like the links post I put up the other day. Like, I think what they should do, to be honest, is like pass some pretty like clear rules right away that like don't need a lot of deliberation, but then like don't close the door, but like leave it open, but also don't make it easy to like violate them accidentally. Maybe you have a rule that, you know, you can use sponsors, but they can't have in-stadium betting. Like, if you want to do that right away, like maybe just establish, you know, one official sports book of the ACC, whatever it is, like establish this hard and fast rules, make a rule that, you know, players and coaches can't participate in gambling on their own team and the outcomes. Like, because, you know, I mean, if it's that widespread, like a player could easily just like step outside that rule if it's not in there for them. Setting up some hard and fast rules like that, and then maybe doing some more research and going into it so that you're covered for the 2018-2019 academic year, that might not be a bad idea. And given the fact that we're still going to be waiting on states to make their own regulations, like that's probably the most prudent thing to do, at least in the short term, for the ACC and every other conference.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what the like immediate response is from the NCAA. I'm sure there's been a statement that didn't say anything, but it seems like there will have to be some like rule clarifications in whenever they meet next. Because I don't know.
Well, they're going to do the same thing they do about booze, is that they said blanket no. Then it was like, well, maybe. And it was like, why don't we give it? Why don't we let a trial run happen? Then, okay, that seems to work. Let's do a little bit more. And then suddenly it's like, all right, everyone can have booze.
That's probably right. And it makes sense. I more mean like for the players, although I'm sure there's already like a million like anti-gambling rules on the books for players and coaches. We've already had, you know, we've had gambling scandals in college sports before. So, right. Yeah, I we'll see what goes on. I don't anticipate this like really changing too much about how college sports are run just because, you know, they're always so far behind things. But maybe the NCAA wises up and tries to get their cut like the NBA will.
I would agree, though.
And then not give it to the players.
Yeah, because, that's definitely what's not going to happen. It will go to everybody but them. Yep. But I hope that maybe this starts spurring a little more of that conversation. Who knows? In other big news in college sports this week, obviously directly related to us, Syracuse has approved $118 million spend on what they're calling new stadium experience renovations. So very little mention of dome, no mention of carrier. Dan, do you think they're getting out of this contract?
They're gonna try. They put it in and it said dome at first. It didn't say carrier ever, but the first draft of the release called it new dome experience, I think. And then they very quickly revised that and took the word dome out as well. A, because, like, I guess with this hard roof, it isn't really a dome anymore, which is weird to think. I think everyone will still call it the dome.
Right.
But B, I assume they just don't want the dome branding in there at all, just to make it very clear that this is no longer the carrier dome. This is, like, a whole, like, basically, their argument's going to be, like,
it's not a dome. The building itself is
not a dome.
No,
it's not the carrier dome. The building itself is going to have enough changes to be, like, a different stadium. So they're just going to do whatever they can, and they should. Like, the carrier contract was a tough spot for Syracuse. They probably should have had more foresight with how they structured it, but I believe it was, if not the first, like one of the very first naming rights deals.
And it was the first in college.
Yeah, so there really wasn't a lot of knowledge in terms of what the like going rate for those were. So we got this like what $1 million lifetime deal from Carrier, which I'm sure at the time, like, you know, who's turning down $1 million even if you're a school. When you assume that like it's not going to be this huge thing, we're big, you know, iconic stadiums like the Carrier Dome. Honestly, it's probably one of the more iconic in college sports when you really think about it. Like everyone knows of the dome, and it definitely has way more value than that. And instead, we got stuck with this like horrible lifetime contract for a company that then ditched out on the area. What, like 10 years later?
Yeah.
So it'll be a little weird when they eventually do get out of that contract, but it's absolutely the right move for the school and for the facility. So hopefully they get that done. And that being said, like I think eventually people will forget like the whole Carrier part, or not forget, but they'll move on from it. But I think they will always call it the dome, whatever the new name ends up being.
Yeah, I buy that, and you know, hopefully it ends up being a local business that jumps in. Hopefully it's one that, like, you know, I'd much rather, like, you know, the Wegmans Coliseum than like the Bain Capital Dome.
Yeah, Wegmans, people would lose. I mean, I think people would be very, very excited. We all know of the local fervor for Wegmans, and justifiably so. I think it'd be hard to find a more beloved company to take it over. And obviously, I think Wegmans is pretty probably big enough now. They're all over the place. They're down in like Virginia, so that'd be really cool. Maybe they should just stick a Wegmans in the new not dome. So people can just do their shopping that they would be doing when they're not going to the football game.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of gets to my next point of like what should be in this thing, because there's like some cool features, and we can kind of go through them in this episode. But I think one of the big ones that was kind of discussed in the lead up to all of this was around, you know, what do we introduce here, and how much of a role does local food have in all of this? So yeah, I'm hoping that in particular, and I don't necessarily know if it ends up being food shopping, but I think a Wegmans sub station does sound like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think anything local is a plus. The fact that there isn't a dinosaur stand yet is like already, because there is a local bar, there's like a not a local, there's a barbecue spot that opens up, I think, just during basketball season. But it's not Dino. I think it's just like non-branded. But Dino should definitely have a spot in there. They have one in like the airport, I think. Like, there's no reason why they can't get like a, you know, very limited menu, you know, brisket, pulled pork sandwiches in the stadium. Local beers, I mean, the Syracuse beer scene is like quite good. There should be more local options. They started getting more like in the last couple of years. So there have been like minor things with the concessions they've been doing, and I think they just need to like just really ramp that up. You can have your cardboard pizza slices and your nachos, but there should be much more in terms of what you can get there. Wegmans makes sense. Like a sub stand would be a no-brainer. Yeah, I mean, I think anything that connects the arena to the local community is a plus, especially in a place like upstate New York.
Yeah, and I mean, every other stadium's doing it, you know, large and small too. Like, I mean, I know, I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago, that like you look at like StubHub Center in Carson, here in LA, where the Galaxy play, like pretty much all the food is local food trucks. Like, you couldn't do that inside the dome, obviously, but you could do something similar with, you know, portable stands. Or just kiosk setups that are reserved for either a rotating list or some permanent and some rotating, you know, local vendors.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty good idea in terms of like keeping the options fresh, because then, you know, you might have a lackluster, you know, a Tollgate game on the schedule, but you have a couple of food stands that haven't been in there before, and people, you know, it becomes more of a, obviously you want to focus on the sports, but there's a huge drive just in terms of all these pretty much everywhere, where attendance has been down. So it's more about the experience and the other things you can do while at the event that you can't do at your house. So something like that, where it's not going to be the same list of like five food options every game, and obviously those have been very stagnant at the Dome for years now, could definitely be a nice thing and a good way to you know, benefit the community as well. Get, you know, some local vendors, some extra pub and exposure in the Dome, which would be cool.
Agreed, agreed. Another, I mean, pretty much buried the lead here. The big thing coming to the dome, air conditioning. This is long awaited. Only needed for about 2 months, but definitely huge. I would say that this was high on the list for just about everybody when they've done dome surveys, both through Syracuse Athletic Department and Syracuse.com. I know anytime we mention it, AC is a big deal. Dan, you think AC drives more attendance though, or do you think it's just a nice to have for the people that were already coming in the door?
It can't hurt. I think that's one of the things that people point to, especially in those early football games where attendance has been a real struggle. Anyone who was at the 2012 Northwestern game in the upper deck will tell you, the dome gets really, really hot, especially early in the year. It was really nice that weekend, the first weekend of September. That was the awful game where Tian Lin was had that fan that like mystery foul call, penalty called against him that basically costs the game.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, it was like 95 degrees in the dome. It was really, really uncomfortable. So yeah, it's funny because like you don't need it most of the time, but in like lacrosse season and like the first couple weeks of football season, it's brutal. And the bigger part of the AC is that it would allow you to have summer events at the Dome, concerts. We've seen what's going on with the Lakeside Amphitheater. I haven't been there yet, but because going up to Syracuse in the summer is like a bit much for me. But they've been getting a lot of different shows. Like pretty much anyone who's doing like the amphitheater circuit in the summer is stopping there, and there's no reason why the Dome can't compete for some of those big shows, especially if the new roof allows for better acoustics, which is going to be a question. I assume the echo at the top of the stadium won't be as bad. But either way, like, we know that there's a push for doing more events in the Dome in general, and the ability to have AC on there in the summer would be huge. They'd be able to do a lot more stuff.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned the roof. There's two aspects of the roof that we should probably talk about. For one, new fixed roof. No more inflatable. That means no more whoosh as you leave.
Which is they should find a way to recreate the whoosh.
You can do the like those hurricane simulator things.
Yeah, there should be like one exit where you can do the like the old Dome jump.
Just to give kids the experience if they never had it. The other part of that is the natural lighting bit, and somebody brought it up in the comments on the blog. I figured I'd bring it up here. While that sounds awesome and I like it quite a bit. It does create a potential weird kind of shade situation, especially for basketball, where, you know, it wouldn't be coming in necessarily in the center of the court, or it would be coming in kind of on the side of the court. Dan, do you think anyone's thought through this? Do you think it's going to be a problem? I know the mock-ups make it seem like it might become an issue. I don't really know enough from an engineering standpoint about how this would potentially be resolved.
Yeah, it was actually one of the first things I thought of, because like having the natural light for football is going to be awesome, and it looks like honestly it just looks really pretty.
Yeah.
But for basketball, it's any day game, it could be an issue. I imagine they have to have thought about this. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for them not to have.
You'd think.
But I also right. I also don't know why I can't imagine if you're building this kind of roof that it would be that much of an issue to implement some sort of like shade. Right. Like literal shade to put over whatever spots you need to keep there from being a glare on the court. Obviously, like, I'm sure some natural light can get into the audience. I don't think that's a huge deal, but I can't imagine there's like it's like a hugely problematic thing to get something to cover up whatever you need to cover.
Yeah, I mean, for me in general, like football or basketball, while I think that the natural light's cool, I do wonder about like what effect it has in the middle of the field. Like, I remember, you know, back in the old Texas Stadium days for the Cowboys, they had that like kind of sunspot in the middle. I think some other teams have something similar. Like, do wonder just if like it does create a little bit of an area where it's either incredibly warm or you know sun get in your eyes a little bit. I'm sure, again, this isn't the first rodeo for the people designing the stadium, so I'm sure it's been thought about, but just something to consider at least.
Yeah, one thing we should take note of is that Syracuse did not engineer this themselves. They hired someone that isn't Syracuse to do it. So I assume like things will be spelled correctly and numbers will be put on the right way. And something like a sunspot or shading for the basketball or court bowl, I'm assuming those have been thought through. I don't know for sure. There's always the chance that they have not been, but I hold out hope.
I mean, there's been accidentally like dumb things in other stadiums before. I mean, then there's even purposefully dumb things. I mean, remember the old hill, like at Minute Maid Park in Houston? Like, the fact that people wanted to play baseball on purpose in Tropicana Field? Like, these are all purposeful things that, like, just happen and are intentionally designed.
Yeah, I feel that's a lot with, like, older stadiums. Especially from like the 80s and 90s, there was a lot more like ridiculous stuff like that.
True.
Versus now, I feel like new stadiums are pretty well thought out.
They are, admittedly. All right, why don't we talk a little halftime, and then we can get into more of this and probably talk some nonsense in the second half of this show.
Sounds good.
So what have you been drinking?
So I have a couple new things. I was in Atlanta last weekend. We didn't do a show last week. I had a couple of different local things that we had actually talked about before I went down, which was nice. I had a Tropicalia from Comforts, which is a solid IPA, one of the local Atlanta breweries that you had mentioned. I had an Over and Over by Orpheus, which was, I can't remember what it was. That was a sour, which was really delicious. I think it was a pineapple sour.
Mm.
Pretty light on the alcohol, it was only 4%, but like super drinkable. Really nice pineapple flavor. So that was really good. I had a Hialeah down there, which was nice. Obviously, that's not an Atlanta beer, but it's a very good beer that it will not turn down generally. I had a bunch of Tropical Torpedoes at the music festival I was at from Sierra Nevada. It was actually nice that, like, Sierra Nevada was, like, the... Well, actually, no, the default beer was, like, Dos Equis, which, honestly, like, if you're going for, like, your cheapest possible beer there, like, I'll take it.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, there are far worse beers than a Dos Equis Amber. But then Tropical Torpedo and regular Sierra Nevada torpedoes were all over the place, so that was nice. And then I also had a Duvel the other day, which was good because Duvel is always like a solid standby, especially if you can find it in a bottle.
True. For me, I was in North Carolina for a bit. Had from Westbrook the Key Lime Pie Goza finally. You can find Westbrook stuff a lot more frequently around there, so I grabbed that shortly after I got to RDU. Grabbed a can of Cloud Surfer, Hazy IPA from Trophy that was super good. I had from Brewery Bavana over in Raleigh, had a Bouquet. It was a barrel-aged Belgian triple that was super good. Had a couple of Sequench Ales from Dogfish Head. Had a Death by Hops IPA from Old Hickory in North Carolina. And then out here, I had from Thorn Brewing, had a Hopster Pot, New England IPA, had an Old Town IPA from Tustin Brewing Company. I've had it before. They've altered the recipe a little bit, and I think it's actually tasting really, really good right now. Had from Beechwood Blendery, a Careful With That Raspberry Eugene Lambic. And then from Modern Times, I had Orderville IPA. That's always a good standby and is on pretty regularly around here. Also had several glasses of High West American Prairie whiskey. That was, I'll always drink High West. They're a fantastic distillery out in Utah.
Who knew? Utah.
I know. Of all the states that would produce that, Utah knows what's up.
Very nice. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So other things for this stadium to be named. Vertically hung scoreboard. We alluded to that a little bit earlier, just in terms of the space.
On a track, too.
On a track, which is really smart. Yeah, I was glad really to hear cool. that. Because when I first saw it, the first question a lot of people had was, what are you guys doing about basketball? And on a track, super smart. I'm, again, very glad that they're doing that. New sound and lighting systems, that's a given. Enhanced Wi-Fi. I feel like a lot of stadiums are going that route. It's to be determined on how enhanced it really is. You know, I've been to a bunch of NCAA events where they, like, you know, roll in all the cell on wheels and everything else, and they say that it's better, and then it really isn't. So we'll see for, like, a standard game just how good the Wi-Fi is. I don't know. Dan, you've been to a game at the Dome more recently than I have. How's the Dome Wi-Fi now?
It's been bad pretty much every time I've gone.
There you go.
If it works at all, you're thrilled. And apparently that goes to the media too, which is I haven't covered a game in the Dome in a long time, but that's probably the bigger issue. But yeah, it's never been good. It's been there, but it's never been good for the normal experience. It's fine like up until game time, and then once everyone's actually there, it just goes to hell.
I feel like that's the standard, unfortunately, across the board, no matter where you go.
Yeah, that's not even like a Dome issue. That's like a literally everyone issue.
Yeah, it's just these things are never stress tested for some reason.
Yeah, the one place, I think City Field's Wi-Fi has done a lot better recently. And there have been some stadium Wi-Fis that are okay. I actually have the Barclays Center media Wi-Fi on my device.
Oh, same.
From like one time I covered something there, which is always nice. But yeah, otherwise, like, you know, overall stadium Wi-Fi is very shoddy.
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully that's better. What else? Oh, ADA accessibility upgrades that are just good in general. Though I didn't see anything about seating upgrades. And I think everyone's a little like annoyed by that we're probably still doing bleachers on most of this stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It kind of surprised me if that wasn't part of like one of the next steps. It seems like they're doing the roof first and then they're doing the internal stuff. Because I believe Pete Sala like actually mentioned this specifically as a thing they wanted to address. At least like for some sections maybe.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, honestly, I just think if like some of them are upgraded, that'd be good. I'm sure the luxury boxes will be upgraded because they're pretty outdated. And then the last thing. Oh, and then of course, can't forget bathroom upgrades. The troughs are dead. And
Yeah.
some people are more happy about that than others, Dan.
I didn't realize how passionate people were going to be about the troughs on both sides. I'm not a huge fan of the troughs, but like it doesn't end my life. It's not like, you know, the bane of my existence.
Right.
Obviously, our good friend Hoya Setsa felt very differently. He wrote an entire piece on the troughs going away.
A treatise.
Yeah, and I'd reckon to say the response has been more pro-trough than anti-trough.
Which, like, doesn't surprise me. I mean, no offense, Syracuse citizens, former and current. But we are a group that's very stuck in our ways, and I do feel like this is just another one of those, like, typical opinions of, like, of course you're pro-trough because it's the current thing. Versus,
yeah, and like, it also wasn't even, like, older people. It was just, like, there were people I know that are my age in the comments that were very pro-trough. So I was like, all right, well, that's, I guess, like...
I'm just anti... I even mentioned in the comments, Dodger Stadium is, like, 7K bigger, and they have urinals, and it's fine.
Yeah. I do enjoy that the new push now in the comments for a couple of posts are, instead of getting rid of the troughs, we should just move them to the center so everyone has to look at each other. And... I really enjoyed that. I thoroughly, because that's been like half the comments the last couple of days.
Well, you don't even need, the thing is like you don't even need to change anything if you do that, because then you just make the troughs the sinks. And
that's true. You just reconfigure.
Yeah, I mean, do you even need to reconfigure? I guess is the question.
The sinks are probably not big enough. If I'm trying to remember the dome sinks,
just make them slightly bigger. Make the trough slightly smaller. I know I joked in the comments too. What if you just put trough? Would you put a trough in every stall? Would that be a compromise?
What you could do is just put up like dividers along the trough.
I just,
and then you get rid of like some of the issue.
You get rid of some of the issue. I just, for me, like everyone's making this really big deal about like the efficiency, and I don't really think it's that much of a change, or at least as big of a change as they think it is.
No, because you can just like put that many stalls up, and it's maybe like one or two extra people bumped out, depending on how close people are getting during these trough sessions. But, like, it doesn't take that much time to exit a stall. Or exit, like, just don't walk away from a urinal.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, the urinal area is designed, for the most part, like, maybe you lose one person lopped off, but, like, by and large, it's the same amount of space.
Yeah. The fact that there are, like, it's a weird thing to get like super hung up about.
Yeah, so you know that's definitely going to be the case. I'm looking forward to those going away. I think everybody else is too, but we'll see. I, like you, I was very surprised to see the amount of just like pro and anti venom on both sides, where people are pretty pissed, like one way or the other. I really enjoyed the at Orange Bias video earlier with I Will Remember You and the
I saw that. That was
and
great.
The trough pictures. That was very good. Well done, internet, as always. You are undefeated.
Yeah, I think part of it's that like we didn't get that many details aside from like the scoreboard and the roof in terms of what's actually changing. So like the troughs were like the one big thing you could grab onto. But yeah. I'm not going to mourn their loss.
No, same. I guess some other things. We talked dome quite a bit today. NCAA lacrosse tournament's still going on both sides. Wrote an article today ranking the teams left by hate, because half the bracket, and specifically one side of the bracket, is a group of teams that we do not like. And then the other side of the bracket is like one team that maybe we don't like, but by and large, we just don't really care about the other four. Dan, do you feel like the order I put together aligns with yours, or do you feel like some teams need to shuffle around?
I don't. The one thing I will say, I don't mind Cornell as much as, like, I'd probably put Duke. I'd definitely put Maryland ahead of them. I'd probably put Albany ahead of them. Right. I just don't have, like, I feel like Cornell's, like, a good program. They've won before. We beat them in 09 in that awesome game. So, like, I don't have a huge problem if Cornell wins. And then after that, though, I kind of agree. Loyola, I have no problem with. I think Yale is probably who I would root for as a Connecticuter.
I've just always liked Yale. I don't know why.
Yeah, I feel like they're like less... That's probably not true. But
less
it's not like,
douchey Ivy.
Yeah, compared to Harvard, at least. And that's probably not, and Princeton probably in lacrosse. And they're also not like a classic lacrosse powerhouse,
right?
Which helps. And they're from my home state. I've been to Yale. I've like worked in New Haven before. It's a really nice campus, et cetera, et cetera. Denver, I don't know. So Denver kind of annoys me sometimes. Yeah. I don't want to be like the I really don't want to be like the lacrosse purist person. I'm never that person. So yeah, I think if it's Denver versus like any of those top four or five, I'm fine with them winning. But I think I would definitely root for Yale or Loyola ahead of them.
See, I want Denver to succeed because I want West Coast lacrosse to succeed. I would laugh if West Coast lacrosse succeeding ended up basically like crushing the Big East Lacrosse Conference, because if enough West Coast teams showed up, Denver would be there, and the Big East would be SOL in terms of their best program.
That would be pretty funny.
That would be pretty funny, just because, yeah, like, you know what? We didn't destroy the Big East the first time around, but anything that happens afterward, I'm cheering for now just to see it happen, so that we can point to that and go, see, that's the moment. But that might just be bitter on my end. Yale faces Loyola. Denver faces Albany. So ideally over there, I would love a Yale versus Denver situation in the Final Four on one side. And then the other, give me... I'd be fine with Maryland Duke, but Cornell Duke's also fine, I guess, as long as, like... Unfortunately, I have to root for Duke to get to the championship game.
Yeah, that's tough. I think I might dislike Maryland lacrosse more than I dislike Duke.
I mean, I just dislike Maryland fans more than I dislike Duke lacrosse.
Just Maryland lacrosse has done so many awful, like, there's so many bad memories associated with Maryland, where Duke, like, when Duke's beaten us, they've just been really good.
Right.
And Maryland did, like, the whole, like, squatting on the ball thing in, like, 2011.
Yeah.
Whatever year that was. That was probably my least favorite lacrosse memory ever, going to that game in Foxborough. I went to the game where we lost to Duke in the title. Oof. And, like, at least we were there, and Duke just, like, was awesome. I can deal with that. I can deal with just losing to a really good team. I can't deal with losing to Maryland, you know, laying down and playing parking the bus. Like, just, ugh.
Well, at least they made rules to prevent them from doing that anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Also, like, I guess I can, you know, we can also toss in the ACC Pride, like, thing if we need a differentiator.
Well, like the AC, I mean, I mentioned this kind of in my post recapping the Cornell loss. I do feel like, you know, us going 4-0 against that group, three of the four teams getting knocked out in the first round. Like, I know it's a crapshoot in some ways around matchups, and none of the teams really got blown out or anything. You had 2 2-goal losses and 1 1-goal loss for us. So again, not as if there was like this huge kind of inequity, but like, was a bit of a commentary on you know, the ACC being very good top to bottom just by definition, but like not necessarily having that elite group. So we'll see if Duke beats Hopkins. I think if Duke is able to get advanced, then sure. Like we had the one elite team in Duke, and then a lot of other teams that were just kind of beating up on each other. Versus if Duke loses to Hopkins, then maybe, you know, okay, like the ACC didn't have that elite team this year, but they had plenty of talent at least.
Also, it's Hopkins, so yeah.
Also, Hopkins, I want you to lose just out of principle. And I almost considered rooting for Georgetown.
Ooh, that's tough. Georgetown lacrosse is like such a nothing that like I almost get it, but that's tough.
Well, Georgetown, yeah, admittedly, like Georgetown lacrosse probably stole that bid from what? Ohio State?
Yeah, I think so.
Ohio State or maybe Rutgers? I mean, either way, I mean, I'd root for Ohio State lacrosse before any of the teams in that little quadrant.
Oh, 100%.
Because I as soon as
they don't care. None of them care.
Yeah, as soon as I saw that like quadrant come out, I'm like, ugh, like I just hate all four of those goddamn teams, and one of them's going to the Final Four.
It's really brutal.
Yeah, for Syracuse fans and for those who aren't looking at the bracket like we are, Hopkins faced Georgetown and Duke faced Villanova in the first round. That's not. All four of
like
those teams.
Nova was so clearly the most palatable option there.
By a mile. And even then, like the fact that Villanova could be the most palatable means something's gone terribly wrong. It also guaranteed that only one of those four was getting to the Final Four, so I guess that's good.
Yeah, I guess. Although it's not like we have a much better situation now with how things shook out.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh, God.
But at least like, yeah, like Albany, whatever. But like, the fact that one of Yale or Loyola gets there is fine with me, and then everything else is just trash.
Yep.
Who's your pick to win this thing, Dan?
I don't know. I feel like Maryland's just been the most consistent team, which is, after crapping on how they play and how much I dislike them, it just feels like a thing that should happen. In terms of, as I said before, I'll probably root for Yale from this group, but I'll probably go with Maryland just because, I don't know. I'm going to pull in like other sports things. Like the Mets have been playing so poorly that my sports life right now is just kind of in shambles. So it feels like Maryland will probably win the lacrosse tournament. Because like, Hopkins, I feel like isn't gonna win. Just like Hopkins just hasn't gotten over the hump in such a long time. Yeah, so I'll say Maryland will win, and I'm rooting for the Bulldogs, for the Elis.
Yeah, gimme. I'm going with the Final Four of Maryland, Duke, Yale, and Denver. And then gimme Duke over Yale in the final, as much as I'd prefer the opposite.
So, fair enough. I mean, I could definitely see that as well. Duke turns it on in the tournament a lot, so.
They do. Although not in the last 3 years. This would be their first Final Four since 2014. So I
Really?
learned while I was look yeah, I know, I thought they were there every year. But yeah, I looked over on Wikipedia, and that was the result that came through.
So it's probably right.
Yeah, sure. Dan, did you have any kind of like around the college football or basketball verse crap? I guess we could talk NBA draft combine and the lottery.
It makes sense. I mean,
Might
that
as
did happen.
well.
The lottery did happen for about 2 hours last night.
Jesus Christ. Just,
It was so bad.
it was so dumb. It was so bad. It was like no actual content. Like what they really should have done is like I would have been fine with either like some sort of roundtable of like former players from the teams, maybe like doing like a 5 minute thing on each team's season, and like that would have at least been something worthwhile. Instead, it was just the usual like ESPN jerk offs, like sitting there and like talking about the same thing over and over again that hasn't changed since the lottery order was set.
It really was like the craziest amount of dragging something out you could possibly do. Like there was nothing meaningful done during
No.
that whole time until they actually did the drawing. And during the 15 picks, there were like two commercial breaks.
I know. And even like the Silver interview was bad.
Yeah, and you had the one guy like going on for a minute about his Penny Hardaway bobblehead, and
Right.
like it was insane. It might have been like it wasn't quite as drawn out in terms of like length of the actual presentation as the Slush and Sunday, but I think Slush and Sunday is more interesting than what we saw. Like, and I hate Slush and Sunday. Oh, like especially this year was all horrible.
Right.
Yeah, last night was probably worse
Yeah, I don't really understand what was
because it was
going
like an
on.
hour and a half of like literally nothing anyone cared about, and then they shoved the information, but then they even spread that out way longer than it needed to be. It was just, oh God, it was so bad.
Yeah, and all that paired with the fact that my Knicks once again did not move for the 15th straight lottery, which I feel like from an odds perspective, that's impossible.
I mean, at least you guys had Patrick Ewing.
At least we had Patrick Ewing, and that got us a 7-game loss to Houston, and then an injury to Patrick Ewing got us a 5-game loss to San Antonio in the finals. And I guess some cool memories, most of which I was too young to actually recall. So that's fun, I guess. But yeah, good for Phoenix. I wrote something about them on the comeback today that posted. Kind of talking about how they could finally fix what was like 10 years of just them just mailing in the whole rebuild process.
Yeah, it's crazy because like we were looking the other day, Phoenix is like one of the most winning, like in
Yeah,
terms
they're
of
like
just like
fourth
raw win
winningest ever.
percentage, they've never been bad until recently,
Yeah,
and
which is
that's
like
weird.
odd, because they've only made the finals, what, like twice?
Yeah,
That sounds
maybe
right.
twice. Yeah, this is a thing we can look up and verify, But they've always been, like, a pretty solid team all the way through the Steve Nash. And then, like, just recently they've been such a nothing. And it's bizarre. It's, like, it's not weird because it feels like a team that should, like, have these down periods, but this last one's been so long. Yeah, so they went to the finals in 76 and 93.
Yep, I remembered. I knew one was against the Celtics, the other one was against the Jordan Bulls. I just didn't know the years.
Yeah. So, good for them. I'm very interested to see what they do. You obviously, I mean, I think it's down to Ayton and Doncic, in which case you have connections to both those guys. Obviously, if you want to throw Bagley in there, he's also an Arizona native. But really, it's interesting that you have probably the top three picks in the draft, in all likelihood, all have direct connections to either the area, with Ayton and Bagley both being from Arizona, or Doncic having played for the new Suns coach. So, really interesting situation here. Have they never had the first pick?
Yeah, this is their first time with the first pick.
That's what I thought.
I don't, like, here's the problem though. Like, I feel like Doncic should be the pick just because of the coach, but, like, they don't need him. Like, if you look at, like, who's on the roster already, like, they don't really need him.
No, I think Ayton's probably Ayton probably fills in a need better. Right. I think there's a chance that Doncic ends up being the better pro, and you can, like, find a unique way to fit him in the team. But I think Ayton's easier to plug in, and I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to make a decision like this.
Yeah, like, how many... Like, I don't necessarily buy the best player adage, like, when you have the first overall pick. Like, I just feel like if you have the first overall pick and you have every option available to you, like, I would almost try to trade back if you don't want to... I mean, and then again, like, I don't think any team... I don't think the number two team is going to try to jump in. So you're looking at, like, potentially falling further back. But, like, if you're the Suns, like, Doncic is the guy, but... Looking at your roster, like, he's definitely not, just because, like, you already have wings. Like, you have TJ Warren, you have Josh Jackson, you have Devin Booker. Like, these are all guys that are redundant of Doncic in one way or another. Like, so by that measure, like, you know, Ayton's the guy because you don't have any bigs, because Chandler has 1 year left on his deal. Len is an expiring that's going to be off the books, and you're probably not going to re-sign here. Bender, we don't really know what he is. Like, none of the, like, they don't really have size that's dynamic on the offensive end like Ayton is. So that kind of leads to, okay, so, like, you draft him, but then, you know, if he's a bust, then you are kind of back at square one. I don't think they will be, though, because, like, right now their salary for next year is on the books at $78 million. They have room to sign a big name if they want to. To be honest, like, I don't think they're in the LeBron sweepstakes at all, unfortunately. But at the same time, like, some big names in the next couple of years could see what they're building out there. Arizona's close to a lot of big cities, you know, Vegas, all the cities in Texas, Los Angeles, San Francisco. You kind of have it in Denver. Like, you have a nice location there. Your travel gets cut down considerably. Because of your location, and you're not really necessarily, like, skewed one way or the other. Tax situation's great. Real estate prices are good. Like, weather's great for the most part, save the summer when you can live elsewhere anyway. There's a lot of draws to Arizona. I don't know necessarily what's going to stop, like, what would stop a player looking for a cool situation where they can be the guy. From going there, where there's already a lot of young pieces in place and a lot of manageable contracts to build something interesting.
Yeah, and that makes you wonder if you think Doncic is the guy, do you try to move off of a Josh Jackson after 1 year and maybe lose a little bit of value because he did come along late in the year, but try to jump back in to that late lottery area and try to add another piece elsewhere and then take Doncic in that spot?
Yeah, I mean... That's a possibility. Like, do you think that Doncic, Booker, and Warren can all coexist, though?
I think it depends on what kind of player Doncic is in the NBA. I've seen...
He's a passer.
I think if he can be a point guard, and maybe not, like, you know, your classic, you know, 6'2", obviously, point guard, but, like, a point guard in the I saw, I forget who it was, it might have been Ryan Russillo, who compared him to James Harden the other day.
Interesting.
In that sense where, you know, he's obviously going to try to be a scorer as well. But if you think he can be the de facto point guard and Booker can play off of him, I don't see why not. That being said, like, he definitely doesn't have, like, an obvious position. And luckily, we're in an era of positionless basketball, so that probably takes away some of that concern. But there is some overlap there. But I think you do just, like, try to get the best players and plug them in and make it work. And he seems like a unique enough player where he can kind of be malleable in terms of sliding in next to the other talents they already have.
Do you think there's any way that Sacramento would try to... Sacramento's number two, right? Yeah. Do you think Sacramento would be willing to trade up one?
That's tough. I think trading up one's a weird thing because you're gambling on the team ahead of you taking the same player that you want.
Right.
And that's not a guarantee here because they could easily want Ayton. I feel like that's... You're risking having to give up
a little.
Unless you just don't have to give up that much, which is also a possibility. I mean, if you have intel that you guys want different players and you don't have to give up like a huge haul to move up one spot, but you want to lock in, it's important enough for you to lock in that guy.
That's what I'd be curious about just from Phoenix's standpoint. Like, if you're Phoenix, do you say, you know what, we don't care who we get here? And, like, if Sacramento definitely does care?
Yeah, if you don't care between those two.
Right.
Then, yeah, I mean, then I think it's a possibility. I just don't know how much the Kings are willing to give up. That being said, I realize now I'm talking about the Sacramento Kings, in which case they'll probably give up a lot because they're dumb. They're just a dumb organization.
I'm so glad that Malachi left.
Yeah. I don't know what will happen with Malachi, but
probably nothing good in Toronto, unfortunately.
He's most likely better off.
He's better off, but only to an extent. Like, I do think he needs to get to... That's the problem. Like, in one way, like, oh, great, I'm going to be on a team that has a lot of young players. They have no idea what the hell's on the roster. Like, that sounds awesome, except for the fact that Sacramento mismanages everything. So then you get sent somewhere else, which is great, except for the fact that it's Toronto, who's already, like, kind of veteran-laden and not necessarily going to give minutes. I mean, it's the same problem that, like, Chris McCullough had when he got sent from Brooklyn to Washington. Is like, okay, so now you're just doomed forever to sit in, like, you know, back-and-forth purgatory between, like, the D-League, whoever the hell their G-League team is. And, like, they don't have one, right? Or they don't have one. They don't have one yet. I think they're going to have one next year.
The Wizards do not, I don't think. The Raptors do. It's the
Raptors,
one that...
Raptors 608 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the one that Stackhouse coaches.
Yeah, that one I knew. Like, I didn't know the Wizards situation for McCullough.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Wizards have one.
I don't think they have one yet. Or, like, they were the Dakota Wizards. Or they're just sending everybody to Erie for the time being. I don't know. Anyway. So, yeah, I think like, you know, any Syracuse player, or any player really doesn't want to be in the situation that McCullough and Malachi have been in, where you are in that purgatory situation where, like, you're not really, even if you play well, and McCullough did play really, really well at the G League level, is that you're not necessarily going to have your opportunity to succeed at the NBA just because, like, there are limited roster spots and some teams are in different situations. Like, in baseball, those situations just arise. You have a larger roster. There's more positions, obviously. There's different places where you can plug in as a young player. That's not necessarily the case in basketball, where if a team's contending, like Washington thinks they are, like Toronto thinks they are, you know, you don't have that opportunity to slot in no matter how talented you are at the G League level.
Yeah, and that's why it's so tough looking at, like, what Tyus is deciding on. When you're going to be, like, a late first-round pick, even if you had a guarantee, fitting in is just such a tough spot. You can find a place where you end up playing, like, really good minutes, and that's happened for other Raptors even. Like, they used their bench really well, but it was guys who fit in alongside their big-time guards, and then you have a guy like Fred VanVleet who becomes, like, the super sub third guard on that roster. But that doesn't leave a spot for Malachi. So if you're Tyus Battle, obviously there are spots later in the draft that can work out great. But
like the
if
Hawks.
You land it, yeah.
But then, like, you're probably taking Andrew White's spot.
Yeah, possibly. Which, you know, is what it is. But like the Hawks, there's going to be plenty of playing time to go around. Problem is you're on a bad team, but you can still make your name for yourself. But if you land on one of these, like, loaded rosters or just a place that just happens to have a lot of guys in your position group, it becomes very difficult to stand out, even if you are a late first-round pick.
Tyler
and then,
Lydon.
Obviously, yeah, like Tyler Lydon, who also dealt with an injury this year, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a really sticky situation. If he gets a first-round promise or a first-round grade, I find it very hard to blame him for going for the guaranteed money. But it you know, you really have to. There is a lot of luck that goes into landing in a situation where you will be able to stick. I mean, look at Wes Johnson. Like, Wes Johnson obviously went really early in the draft. He didn't work out to the extent that you would hope. What was he, a number three pick or a number four pick?
He was number four, I think. Deion was number three.
Right. But he was just able to find the right roster situation, and I think he still has guaranteed money coming to him next year. Deion is honestly like a fairly similar situation. He didn't work out in Cleveland, but I think he's going to be in Miami for a while. Hopefully the injury recovery goes well. But he's kind of found spots where he can prove himself versus, you know, guys, some of the younger guys that we've had go out who just never got into the right situation. So, you know, battles at the combine this week. Hopefully he impresses and does well. If not, he has a very welcoming fan base back in Central New York that will take him in gleefully. But we'll see. It seems like things are trending up for him, if anything, based on what we've heard.
Yeah, it seems like he's at the top of the list of all of those players that have a lot to earn or gain at the combine. I know Bleacher Report had him on there, and College Basketball Report had him on there. ESPN had him on there today. So I'd be shocked if he's back at this point. I think everyone's just waiting for him to show that he, you know, we talked about this in the comments a little bit. I think he's going to play in the 5-on-5 drills just so he can show himself outside of the zone in a more complete offense and one that doesn't necessarily completely rely on him. So if he can do those two things in 5-on-5 drills, and I think he can, like, there's nothing for him to gain from 1-on-1 competition just because all it does is mimic the type of offense that he was already playing in. So I think if he plays well in 5-on-5, I think he'll get that guarantee from somebody. I just don't know who that is. I would bet that the Hawks are interested. I didn't look at the rest of the back end. I would think that a player like him, you know, in San Antonio, like some other places, like where there are openings for a guy like him. It just, again, like we said, depends on the fit. But I could see him getting that first round guarantee this week.
Yeah, and we could find out if he decides to pull out of drills. That's probably what that means. We've seen that with a couple guys already. I think Mitchell Robinson, the weird five-star player who committed to Western Kentucky and then never played there and then wasn't playing, he pulled out of drills today, which makes people think that he got a promise for the first round. And then I think a Boise State player did as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, if those names keep falling, like people have been saying, like if you listen to, like, I don't know how much time you spend with like the Draft Class podcast over at The Ringer. And I know they've talked about at length kind of, you know, the first like 15 picks are kind of locked in. And then after that, like the 16 through like 45th players are all like about the same, which, you know, if you're battle, if you're anybody in the back half of the second, the first round, you're doing a lot of mental calculus to see kind of how many guys are locked in and what's left out there for you. And I mean, we're already seeing, you know, names drop off that list. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. It is nice to see that Syracuse seems to be both, like, from Boeheim and, like, the school in general has been much better about, like, supporting him and, like, just being positive about the whole experience versus how we've handled the last couple, which obviously Boeheim done a Boeheim. But for a couple years there, he was pretty good about it with, like, Deion and Wes and, like, those other guys who were going to go high. And then with these other, like, middling guys, he's been pretty like, salty.
Yeah.
Which, like, I get, but, you know, isn't the best way to handle it, I don't think. So it seems like we've kind of come around. I don't know if we had, like, some PR lessons go around or whatever, but we seem to be handling the battle on the board much better. And, you know, from battle side as well, like, you have his dad who seems to actually want him to come back if possible. So we'll see. I mean, I think we've been through this so many times. I think most of us are kind of cool with whatever he decides, and hopefully it works out.
Agreed. Yeah, I guess off-season podcast ended up going over an hour. These things happen. No one should be surprised, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's not every week we get a stadium announcement, so.
True.
A long-awaited stadium announcement.
I would agree. All right, Dan, anything else before we depart this week?
No, just looking forward to the hopeful continued emergence of summer, which has been here and then hasn't been here. So
we are just kind of hanging around that 65 degree and sunny range every day. So I don't know. I guess we'll get to like real, quote unquote, real summer soon ish.
Yeah, we were at 80 earlier in the week, and today we were at like 50. So yeah. New York.
All right. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.